Hello and welcome to Test Master Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I'm your host, GP John Paz. Of course, with me, the star of the show, the former WCW and ECW World Tag Team Champion, one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in the history of the business, the Games Master, the Test Master, the Devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
Doing great, JP. Doing great. How are you doing, my friend?
Not too bad. Had a bit of a blizzard over the weekend. It was about a foot of snow. Pretty crazy, but outside of that, not bad.
Yeah, my brother, I told you, lives in New Hampshire. The other day, the temperature, not the wind factor, was 12 below.
Whoa, damn. I wonder what you do when it gets that cold. You just stay inside, I guess?
Yep, and light a big fire in the fireplace.
Yeah. So I don't know if you've read too much into this or know too much about this, but recently Shane McMahon, for some reason, was let go from the WWE. I don't know. Like, what do you think about that? That's kind of shocking. No, he's leaving again.
Yeah, that is shocking. Who gave him his notice?
Right? Would it have to be his dad? I mean, that's nuts.
Yeah.
And the reason they're saying he's gone is because the way he booked himself, because he was the agent, he booked the Royal Rumble match, and he was in the Final Four, and he was so dominant. But I don't know if that necessarily is true. I mean, isn't Vince the final say in everything? So Vince had to okay it.
I would think so. We never know what's behind the scenes. This could be, who knows.
Very strange, and I'm sure he was going to be on WrestleMania, too, because it seems like, you know, then once they bring you back for the Rumble, they probably got some plans for you for WrestleMania, too. So, very interesting.
Yeah, it is. I mean, he's a major stockholder, I think, isn't he?
Oh, big time, yeah.
The wrestling world is a strange world.
You never know what's going to happen in this business. You never know. Sometimes it's really crazy, and sometimes it's slow, but that just kind of came out of nowhere. That was pretty shocking.
Yes, it was.
As far as today's topic, WCW / NWO Super Brawl 9, February 21st, 1999, Oakland, California, at the Oakland Arena. The attendance was 15,880, so very close to 16,000 people. The tagline, "He who wins the belt has the power," the World Heavyweight title. And the pay-per-view buys 425K. What do you think about that? That's crazy.
Yeah, it sure is.
It's so interesting because if you go back and you looked at January of 99 for the WWF, of course, Royal Rumble, their second biggest pay-per-view. It's a gigantic show. That did like almost 700,000 buys. Sold Out, which we talked about a few weeks ago, did about 330,000 buys. So WWE did well, but WWF did better, and there's a million buys for the month. This month is really, really intriguing because you guys do 425K, and the WWF has St. Valentine's Day Massacre, first time they're doing the pay-per-view, but it only does about 400K, and but it's headlined by Steve Austin versus Vince McMahon, so Hogan and Flair outdrawing pay-per-view-wise Austin and McMahon.
That's surprising, isn't it?
Very. But why do you think, like, Hogan, Flair, you've done that main event a million times. That's right. The big main event. How come Flair Hogan was still drawing at that point to the point of 425K? You think people were still just intrigued with them? Because a little bit later, they start losing their pay-per-view power.
Yeah, I think that at the time, they were the two biggest names in the wrestling business. But they were losing the momentum, going back to the well so many times. And we'll see it, as you said, later, how it kind of fell off. But Oakland was Hogan Town. He drew a lot of money in Oakland and San Francisco and L.A. So I think that this was their last big hurrah. And how many times can you go to the well when the people know there's not going to be a clean finish, usually?
I don't know, I was just kind of thinking, like, maybe because Super Brawl had been around, maybe this is Super Brawl 9, so it's been around. Maybe also, like, that was some clout, like, people were used to WCW having the big pay-per-view in February. Maybe they weren't used to WWF having a big pay-per-view in February? I don't know. That's what I was just trying to think of. Maybe that's why. I mean, still 400,000 buys is huge, and it's a great number, but I would just wonder if that played any part of where people were just used to WCW having that pay-per-view in that month.
That's a good analogy, and I got to go with your line of thinking.
Plus, you got to love Hogan Flair. I mean, at this point, it's kind of getting old, but all time-wise, you got to just love those two names together.
Right. Absolutely.
So at this point, are you the assistant booker February 99 and Nash is the head booker? Is that right?
At this period, Kevin was booking and I was his assistant and he was keeping everything in check.
Why the switch to Nash?
Well, at that time, I took 3 months off and they had a little committee going. And I think Eric did the right thing. He put Kevin in that position. And when I came back, Kevin asked me if I would mind helping him. And I said, absolutely. I was once Kevin's tag team partner. And like I said, I've been very close to Kevin since he's been in the business. A lot of people don't understand how smart Kevin was. Obviously, he was one of the greatest businessmen of all times in our business. And I think Kevin wanted to spread his wings. He wanted to see if his ideas could work. And basically, they did.
With those 3 months, were you, was this, you were burnt out, you wanted a vacation? How come you left for 3 months?
I left for 3 months because I don't know if it was 70 or 80 hours a week booking, but when you got off, you got phone calls, you had to field everything. It was a to a point where I didn't think I was being creative enough because I was handling all these ancillary calls and ideas and bombarded. And I think I needed a rest. I mean, one of the things that I think that's the most important, one of the most important things in life is know your weaknesses rather than your strengths. I was up to my ass in alligators at the time. And I'm glad that Eric came to me and I came to Eric and he said, hey, you need some time? I said, yeah, I do. And I was the one that suggested Kevin. And Eric said, well, that's who I was thinking about too. So we both were on the same page.
I know you're saying, you know, he's had a lot of respect in the locker room and stuff, but was he himself pushing to be the booker?
I don't think so, but he was the right choice at the right time. He had a lot of respect in the locker room. You got to realize, too, that he understood the parameters he was in with somebody else's creative control and trying to keep the boat afloat in that situation where he knew with one guy there was no idea that Kevin could run by, that it would be set in stone. It had to be okayed. So Kevin was good at that, too.
Now, Bob Mould, what was his other career? Was it in music?
Oh, yeah, and he still is. He was in Husker Du and another big group. He was one of the godfathers of heavy metal.
How did he get into WCW?
He was a friend of Gary Juster, and they thought they wanted an outside influence because he was such a wrestling fan, and Bob was a very smart guy. And they brought him in, and Kevin and him hit it off right away, and we all did with Bob. And Bob wasn't afraid to play the devil's advocate. He would bring opposite thoughts to the process of booking, which was very good. I have nothing but great things to say about Bob Mould. I really appreciated working with him.
Do you think it's okay to have a non-wrestling guy as long as they know their stuff?
He was a unique guy because I think music and wrestling go hand in hand. And with him being a lead guy on Husker Du, he's tours still to this day. I don't know recently, but he used to have a gig that on Friday he worked in Hamburg, Saturday he worked in London, and Sunday he worked in Paris. And then would fly home. And then eventually he moved to Germany for half the year. And he would go to the matches in Europe before people had really gone to travel to Europe to see matches. So he brought another dimension to the table, which I think was good.
What do you think about, like, his influence? Did he have any, or was it just consulting to a point?
He was consulting to a point, but his thought process was similar to me and Mike's, that you had to have a clean finish in main events on pay-per-views. So I think he bucked the trend, and whether they used it or not, at least he gave ideas that worked. A yes, man. And I enjoyed that about Bob, very much so.
Did Bischoff like him?
I'm not sure. I don't remember them having a lot of conversations, but it had to be okayed by Eric, so obviously he thought it a good call.
And you and Mike Graham and him and Nash, you guys got along well? It wasn't any issues or problems backstage?
It was the three of us. When me, Bob, and Mike, whatever Kevin decided, we were united front. That was so good about that, that even if we disagreed with Kevin, we were 100% behind him. Kevin's a very, very smart guy. I would have loved to have seen Kevin book longer, because he would have grown immensely in that role.
So the pay-per-view itself starts, you get a little bit of an intro video. Torrey Wilson's on it. The former WCW champions are on it. They show a lot of the top stars. They kind of highlight a lot of the feuds. And we're off and running with the first match. Booker T, the legend himself, defeats Disco Inferno in about 10 minutes. Pretty good little match here, got to say. Definitely liked it. Good start. Hot opener. Disco, of course, at this point was wearing a Wolfpack shirt, and he was being the lackey of Scott Hall, if you remember. So Booker T gets the win here. What are your thoughts on Disco in the NWO, even though technically he's not in it, but he's wearing the shirt?
I thought he played a wonderful role. Again, it is a guy that doesn't get credit for what he did. He was a multiverse guy, and he knew how to get heat. He was very, very smart and played that role as Hall's lackey tremendously.
So to me, it's like, okay, you're not going to start off the show with the cruiserweights here like you traditionally do and get the crowd hot, but it doesn't matter because Booker and Disco, I mean, this is an awesome match. The crowd is nuts for it. Booker is super over as a face. Disco is super over as a heel. I mean, crowd was really digging it. I mean, you can't ask for a better opener, really, right? A hot crowd and a great opener.
Yeah. And given that was giving a very entertaining match to start the show and exposing two great performers.
I always kind of go to think, like, let's see what, like, Meltzer kind of just thought about the match, and he didn't think the match was as good as kind of I did, which is interesting because the crowd was so into it. But I don't know, I feel like sometimes he doesn't rate the matches as accurately as they should be rated. But I think that's maybe a different story for a different day. So next up, after Booker T defeats Disco with the Harlem Hangover, you got Chris Jericho with Ralphus and your buddy Scott Dickinson, who recently screwed over Saturn in the match we were talking about a few weeks ago. Chris Jericho with those two defeat Perry Saturn by count out in about 11 minutes. Pretty good match here as well.
Couldn't be any more solid. Two good performers. And look at Jericho still going strong as we speak.
With your boy Scott Dickinson, was there any like long-term, not plans, but I guess long-term plans that you wanted to do with him?
Well, at this time, there was a lot of people going postal, and Scott was a legitimate postman. So we were playing off of what was happening in the real world. And Scott did a magnificent job.
It's just funny to think, like, okay, you got Ralphus involved, you got Scott Dickinson involved. Like, Jericho is becoming quite a circus at this point, but very entertaining circus.
Yeah. And that's why I think he lasted and drew so much money. He reinvented himself so many times. He's done a magnificent job. He's going to be in the top five drivers of all times, or at least in the modern era.
Now, the count-out finish kind of left the fans a little upset here. Really DQ finish, but it just seemed like it fell a little flat. Again, I know you're saying really main events on pay-per-views need to have finishes. Does it matter about the undercard because you're really continuing to build it? Or do you think that you'd rather have some clean finishes here and not DQ finishes?
Well, on this one, we're building it for Jericho in Satin. Kevin had a long range plan for them.
Does anybody kind of say, like, hey, dress a certain way or look a certain way, or is that all Jericho?
That's all Jericho.
Pretty creative, if you think about it.
It was great from the day he started. He just had the hit quality.
Because who would think of it? Hey, I see the truck driver, he was in catering. You would be funny as my manager. Like, you know what I mean? Like, nobody else is thinking of stuff like that.
No.
Were you friendly with Ralphus?
To say hello and tell him he did a good job, that was about it.
He was probably getting a bump in pay, too, on air character and driving the truck.
Yes, I'm sure he was. I don't know what he was making, but I'm sure he got a bump in pay.
So the next matchup, Billy Kidman defending his Cruiserweight Championship, and he defeats Chavo Guerrero Jr. in about 8 minutes and 30 seconds. Another pretty solid matchup. This match is pretty good. Chavo, of course, recently just turned heel, and Kidman is basically Nash's top student, I guess you could say. Like, Nash loves this guy. We keep talking about every week in this period when Nash was booking, and Kidman's getting all these victories.
Yeah. Kevin saw something in Billy that maybe a lot of us didn't see, and he turned out to be absolutely right.
And, of course, he wins with the Shooting Star Press. Does somebody pull him to side and say, hey, this finish is really getting over? Make sure, you know, nobody's kicking out of it, stuff like that, or that's not even needed to be said at this point?
That's not even needed to be said this time.
Then we got the next match, Kurt Hennig and Barry Windham defeating Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko in a 2 out of 3 falls match for the vacant WCW Championship. This match was, of course, a part of the double elimination tournament for the tag titles that was just kind of brought back. Benoit and Malenko had already lost once already. So technically, this isn't really 2 out of 3. Technically, this is part of the double elimination. So just want to lay that out there. So Benoit Malenko had already lost once in the tournament while Windham and Hennig were undefeated. So it was just interesting the way they kind of started off the match, because Malenko forced Windham to submit with a Texas Cloverleaf in about 2 minutes for the first fall. But he taps out quickly to avoid injury so they can continue the match, because he knows they had zero losses, so they know they can continue on no matter what happened in the first fall. So then for the second fall, Windham ends up pinning Malenko, and that goes about 19 minutes for the second fall, and Kurt Hennig and Barry Windham win the tag team championships. And like a total, if you count those two matches together, about 21 minutes. So maybe a little confusing with the double elimination stuff, but what did you kind of think about finally bringing tag teams back to WCW and creating this tournament and giving the titles to Windham and Hennig?
As great as Malenko and Benoit were, Barry and Kurt at this period were as good as anybody in the business. Not knocking Benoit or Malenko, but it's better to have, in my head, Malenko and Benoit in single matches, because you're going to have two great single matches. It's better to put Barry and Kurt together and raise the bar on tag teams.
So with this, like, it's always said that Bischoff didn't really like tag teams. Did you or Nash or somebody have to kind of tell him we got to start pushing some tag teams again? Because he always said for a while there, he kind of like soured on tag teams. He kind of, he didn't want to use them as much.
I think that Kevin understood how important tag teams are. And Eric probably gave Kevin a free rein. And he was seeing results that were positive by Kevin's decisions.
So I think this match was just a little disappointing or fell a little flat, which is kind of surprising given the four guys that are in it. But you think the double elimination thing kind of confused some of the crowd?
I think so. Sometimes we try to be too cute.
Very true. Just, and especially to the live crowd, it fell flat, which is surprising. But they were, I think, a little confused about everything that was going on. Why did Bischoff just not like tag wrestling? It's just not his thing. He always says he wasn't a fan of tag team wrestling for some weird reason.
A lot of people love surf and turf. A lot of people are vegans. It's all your taste. And I think Eric's taste was that he thought that single matches drew and tag matches didn't. Well, I think tag matches draw, and there's a reason. You have to have a good tag team division. And I think that's what Kevin's main goal was, trying to reestablish a tag team division.
So the next match up, the Outsiders, Kevin Nash and Scott Hall, with Lex Luger and Miss Elizabeth, defeat Conan and Rey Mysterio Jr. in about 11 minutes in a hair versus mask match. Elizabeth's hair on the line, Mysterio's mask. So Mysterio must unmask. Actually, pretty good match. Conan was kind of the NWO hunter. Rey Mysterio obviously is Rey. He's great, you know, wherever he is. But pretty good match here. What did you think about Rey Mysterio losing the mask?
I don't think that American wrestlers understand what the mask means to luchadors. It's part of their identity. And when Rey's mask came off, he looked like a little chicklin. I think it was a bad move. But it was something he wanted to try because I think he wanted the kids to relate to Rey. Again, if we knew what worked, we'd go to page 40 in the booking book and say, oh, don't do that. But Kevin was thinking, I believe, it was not done maliciously at all. It was trying to get the kids to buy Rey's stuff and also draw more younger kids, because you got to remember at that time we were really hitting the people from 20 to 40, the NWO. Weren't having a lot of kids in the audience. I think that's why Kevin did that. And we all agreed. We understood when he laid it out what he was doing, and we thought it would work. But none of us really understood, including myself, what the mask means to a luchador. In Mexico, they built and draw huge money, mask versus mask. We made a mistake because we didn't know the culture.
Of course, Rey, you know, when he went to WWE in 2002 until now, you know, he's still there. He had some breaks in between, but he's still there. Still wearing the mask, still selling a ton of merch. So Hall and Nash win, and it's funny because a lot of the dirt sheet guys were like, oh, Nash made Mysterio look so bad, all this other stuff. But the next night on Nitro, Mysterio has, like, remember that gigantic upset, and he beats Nash. So he really didn't make Mysterio look too bad if he put him over the night after.
Kevin, I think, did that because he knew that it didn't work, or felt maybe it didn't work, and he wanted to repay to Rey and get Rey's ass back over. That was a big thing for him to do. People used to say about it, he said vanilla midgets. Was anybody smaller than Rey? Was anybody bigger than Kevin? So he did the right thing.
And then if you think about this, Luger had a bicep injury, so it was originally supposed to be Nash and Luger versus Conan and Rey, and Hall is the replacement here, stepping up for the injured Luger who can't wrestle in the match, which makes sense. I mean, the Outsiders are together, but Luger was really kind of feuding with Conan, so Hall's going to be wrestling twice in this pay-per-view. He did that quite often, you know, stepped up if he's got to wrestle twice, he'll wrestle twice.
Yeah, he loved to wrestle, too. He loved to try to steal the show, and the majority of times he did.
So the next matchup, Scott Steiner defeats DDP with the Steiner Recliner in about 14 minutes to retain the WCW Television Championship. Pretty damn good match here, Steiner and DDP. Would expect nothing less from these two.
Yeah, it was very good. And like you said, couldn't expect anything less.
Do you think Scotty would kind of just go off a little bit sometimes? Because we've heard stories of him just, you know, him just going crazy on some people.
Yeah. Scott would be very explosive at times and completely different personality than Rick, but he drew nothing but money and he looked fabulous.
This, of course, you know, one of the best matches in the card. He gave it some time. Justified, too, because it seemed like Steiner was getting a pretty good push.
Yeah, absolutely.
The next matchup is the aforementioned Scott Hall with Disco Inferno in his corner as he's the lackey. So Hall's back out here for a second time. He defeats Rowdy Roddy Piper for the WCW United States Championship. Match goes about 8 minutes. I don't know. Something just was not great here. This match wasn't clicking on all cylinders. They seemed to have a little bit of maybe chemistry issue. I'm not sure, but maybe Piper was injured, and I just seemed a little off on this one.
Roddy wasn't used to losing. I don't want to put things in people's heads, but there had been some problems with the NWO and Roddy, so that might have been it.
And this match had a lot of interference, too. I mean, Disco, Kevin Nash, you know, it all kind of leads to Piper losing. And a lot of gaga in this one.
Yeah.
So Piper was just not happy with the NWO was doing backstage politics with them?
Right, I think so. Roddy was Roddy Piper. And he did what he was asked to do. But maybe he wasn't happy about it, and maybe it showed during the match.
Maybe he didn't want to lose.
Could be.
The next matchup, Bill Goldberg defeats Bam Bam Bigelow. Nothing great, but pretty good for what it was. The match goes about 11 minutes. I didn't mind it really at all. I feel like the crowd was really into it, and you can kind of tell, like, okay, now we're at another level of, like, pop here because they go crazy for the finish when Goldberg goes for the spear and the jackhammer. He finally vanquishes Bam Bam, who he's been feuding with for months. Good, solid match here. Maybe Bigelow isn't a main event player in WCW like he was in ECW, but you could tell, wow, Goldberg is over like Roba with this crowd.
Yes, he is.
So with Goldberg kind of, you know, getting his revenge on all the guys slowly, like Hall was involved in Starrcade 98 interfering, obviously, with the stun gun. Bigelow was involved. So he beats Hall at Sold Out. He beats Bigelow at Super Brawl. Eventually, he's going to get his revenge on Nash at Spring Stampede. It's just interesting. He doesn't get that one-on-one rematch with Hogan.
Yeah. When you have creative control, you have creative control.
To me, though, it would have been kind of logical, but I think Goldberg maybe would have won again, and maybe that's why it didn't happen?
Correct. Detective Clouseau, correct.
So Goldberg is definitely the most over guy. Obviously, in the main event, Hogan and Flair are very over, too, and Flair obviously was the babyface for this one, who will eventually be turning heel not too long after. But in your head, are you thinking Goldberg's the number one guy? Does it matter who the champion is?
I think Bill should be the champion because the NWO is so strong.
So he kind of vanquishes Bam Bam and still going to be feuding with Nash at this point. With Goldberg, like, are you sensing anything? Is he handling everything okay? Because, you know, they say how much politics are going on. Hall doesn't really like him. You know what I mean? Like, how's he handling himself backstage?
Bill kind of kept to himself. He handled himself excellent.
So the main event of the evening is up next. Hollywood Hulk Hogan, the world champion, defeats Ric Flair in about 12 minutes, retaining his championship. Interesting kind of thing here is that David Flair turns heel, uses the stun gun on his own father, quote-unquote joining the NWO in the process. Not really, but kind of. Just weird here. Why the David Flair turn?
The story was that Rick was an absent father. I've said this before, I don't like brothers fighting brothers. I certainly don't like sons fighting fathers. I understand why they did it. There was a backstory but it turned out they put David in a position where he could win.
It's weird because remember a few weeks earlier we had been talking about it, Hogan and the NWO beat the crap out of David Flair. I don't know, you think that's good storytelling? Like they beat the crap out of the guy, then he turns?
No. I hate that. And I don't like that they whipped him like they did. And then he uses a stun gun on his pad. Just didn't make sense to me.
Oddly booked. But Hogan versus Flair, I mean, for whatever reason, even though this is 99, pretty damn good match. I mean, they always have pretty good chemistry against each other. It was weird that in 92, for some reason, the WWF doesn't book them, you know, in the main event WrestleMania 8 like they should have. But they're still having good matches in 99, 7 years later, and they're still outdrawing WWF pay-per-view buy rate-wise. So, I don't know, it's very intriguing to me that Hogan and Flair kind of were a bugaboo to Vince.
Yeah. I think somebody got in Vince's ear and said, we should have had this match 5 years earlier. And somebody made a bad decision there because, like you said, 7 years later, they're still drawing huge numbers.
So kind of right after this, though, the crowd is really starts to kind of lessen for WWE. It's almost like, okay, that's maybe Hogan and Flair, maybe the last time we wanted to see him. Because the next time, it goes down. You know what I mean? Each time after this, there's less interest. So it's almost like, okay, you guys are the old guard at this point. It's 1999. You're out of your prime. It's for the most part. Like maybe it's time to pass the torch on to Goldberg and the other guys who are super over with the crowd.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that finish didn't help them either. I think that took away some believability. So I think there was a lot of things that you said are true, but I think that finish was the coup de grace.
Why put David Flair in the NWO?
I have no idea. David hadn't even trained, and you got him in a major faction. That didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, not very good. It's weird because, okay, Goldberg is the most over guy in the show. Clearly, he's not in the main event, which is okay. He's fighting Bam Bam, but to me, it's like, okay, that might be like a little bit of a negative. Okay, the most over guy is not the champ, not in the main event. DDP, one of your most over guys, he's getting beat by Scott Steiner. So it's like, all right, they don't need to win all the matches, but all right. Benoit was super over. He got beat. I know it's a little bit of strange booking, though, because Goldberg maybe is not in the spot he's supposed to be in. DDP and Benoit both losing. I guess you can't win them all, but it was just not executed perfectly booking wise.
Yeah, I think the old guard was still in there. There's a lot of creative control all the way down that card.
And Macho's out with an injury. I know Luger's on the show, but he's injured. Obviously, Arn from a few years before. I mean, it's constantly changing and evolving with a lot of injuries and different things going on, but you can control the booking and the creative for the most part, and that's what kind of was the big hole. It wasn't what it once was when you guys were kicking ass and taking names and you're building that heat with the NWO. Right. This was like they had the ultimate counterpunch in the WWF and Steve Austin, and you guys didn't counter with something better.
Right. I agree with you 1,000%. I got nothing to say, but you're right.
So overall, what did you think of the pay-per-view? Thumbs in the middle, okay.
Yeah.
To me, started off pretty good. Booker and Disco was a good match. Jericho and Saturn was pretty good. Kidman Chavo, pretty good. Outsiders against Conan and Ray was good. Steiner, DDP was good. And even Hogan versus Flair, not really bad in the main event, but I wouldn't say it was a bad show, but definitely not a great show either. And I did not like the David Flair finish.
Right.
So let's head towards the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tnptempire.com. Of course, you go to Pro Wrestling Tees, prowrestlingtees.com, and visit the Kevin Sullivan store. You can check out Kevin on Instagram at Taskmaster Talks. Kevin, what else you got going on?
For a week from now, I'm going to Florida to go fishing and diving. See my daughter, I'll be there 3 weeks. So I got nothing coming up except some enjoyment and family time.
Nice. Yeah. Sounds good. Yeah, you deserve some vacation there. So that's Good stuff. Now that Shane McMahon is gone, are you thinking about maybe working WWE? Or you want to help book and agent matches? What do you think?
I think Shane will be back. I think this may be a ploy.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah. We'll see.
Everybody's blaming Nick Khan now. They're saying Nick Khan is getting rid of everybody. Triple H, Shane is trying to get rid of everybody. I don't know what's going on.
I don't either. We'll see soon as another day turns, right?
Yes, very true. I'd like to thank everybody out there for listening. We'll see you right back here next week for a little Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. See you next week, folks.